You all know why I'm here, not an orator. And I would not try to convince you of the worthiness of our cause. I'm a soldier, and we are at war.
We seem to never learn, here we go again. They rallied up the troops, God forgive the sin. Hidden agendas, can't we fight for truth? No, then there be no need to fight. Love isn't fatal, there's no fatalities. Hate supports US principalities. In this separation, we all suffer. We need to be in love with each other. This isn't training, actual invading. Depleted uranium is raining. Iraq, just know we don't have Bush's back. With a vicious attack, crossing borders with might. On foot catching flight. For hypocrisy, I will not fight. The Most High loves I, the word won't die. Even after all the times it's been revised. I've been shot by Charlton Heston, and he even autographed the weapon. The bullet was lodged in my left shin. I asked the doctor, and she kept it in.
The stress of waiting for the tension of battle, readying to make war, making peace with their God.
That guy is in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Before their baptism of fire.
You're listening to truthlovefreedom.org. Today is November 4th, 2006. I'm your host, Sol Real. And if this is your first time listening, just want to thank you for giving me a shot. See if you're interested in any of the topics I'm going to be talking about. And if you're tuning in again, thank you for returning. I hope this is a podcast that's worth your time, and I hope you're enjoying it. I'm going to continue on now where I left off. Basically, in the last one, we just talked about the New Age and Freemasonry and its connection to the mystery schools. And to really go to the root, I believe we have to go back before the mystery schools, because the mystery schools obviously had to come into existence, and therefore there must have been an existence prior to the mystery schools' emergence. But when you go into how the mystery schools came about, there's a lot of speculation. I have my opinion, obviously, on what brought about the mystery schools. And, you know, there's various other opinions. The reason why I'm saying this is because when studying occultism or the mystery schools or Freemasonry or any of them, when you get into the question of origins of this particular religious system, there isn't a whole lot of information. There's just a lot of speculation. And that creates a problem for my podcast. And the reason that creates a problem is because in studying this topic, what you will find out is that there is allegedly various levels of understanding. There is what they refer to as the higher mysteries. There is what they refer to as the lower mysteries. Both of these mysteries, these degrees, I guess levels you would say, basically consist of being still within the branch which is referred to as the esoteric. Upon even that, you go into the exoteric. And I think I touched on that briefly. Basically, the exoteric means that it's information that is made public. The esoteric is information that is concealed within a small group. So just to clarify what I just said there, so there's no misunderstanding. What everybody else believes about world religion is considered the exoteric. It is the information that's made public. But concealed within each one of these religions, there is the esoteric, which is the knowledge that remains concealed within a small group. Within the esoteric, there is lower mysteries and higher mysteries. So the people who are lower are getting some of the concealed knowledge. Yes, it is concealed still. It's still esoteric. But there's only some of it. The full knowledge is the higher mysteries. So the real question is, what do they believe in the higher mysteries? And that is a subject of massive debate with those who study the topic. I am going to give to you my perspective about what the higher mysteries are based upon my reading. This is what I've gathered from my reading. Now, granted, some may think that I am wrong, and some may think that I am right. You are welcome to make your own conclusions. I cannot go through, obviously, and cover every perspective that comes from studying these topics. So you're going to have to do some of the studying on your own if you want to hear the different beliefs about it. And I encourage you just to take any information and draw your own conclusions. Now, I'm going to give you two perspectives. I'm going to give you mine as being that I feel like I understand the higher mysteries. And then I'm going to give you what is the general perception of this teaching, which I consider to be the lower mysteries. Though, obviously, the most people who are in the lower mysteries believe they're in the higher mysteries, and this will make a lot more sense as I get into the various groups explaining how they conceal their knowledge and some of the quotes that basically state this reality. So I'm going to go ahead and begin. I'm not going to start with the mysteries today. What I'm going to start with is prior to the mysteries. I am basically going to teach you the root of religion according to the mystery schools that exist today. This is where they claim the mystery schools came from. And obviously they believe that all religions come from the mystery schools. And I'll go through and I'll give quotes as time goes on. But right now I just want to get you started in a particular understanding. Now, I'm going to give you two stories. It's the same story from two different perspectives. The first one is going to be from the higher mysteries. The second one is going to be from the lower mysteries. And I'll go ahead and begin. In the prehistoric past, man lived subject to nature and the fierceness of the animal world. He roamed the earth as a scavenger, as many of the other beasts of the earth did. Due to his inability to defeat neither many of the larger animals in strength, nor many of the smaller animals in speed, he was forced to eat nuts, berries, and plants to survive. When he was not searching for food, he spent much of his time in safe places, hiding from predators. During the evening, as the sun fell out of the sky, man retreated to his cave for the night. He huddled in the murky blackness, cold and naked and usually hungry. He sat listening to the beasts roam around outside, calling out into the darkness as they searched for a meal. If he was found, he might be eaten. If he was not found, he anxiously awaited the rise of the morning sun. Since the sun was dwelling in the heavens, it must have been a gift from God. It was said to be the Son of God. The sun was good and the darkness was bad. Thus, the daytime sun was the Savior and the darkness was the enemy. The sun was the bringer of light and life, the protector and the sustainer. When the sun would rise to its highest point in the sky, it was believed that a battle would ensue between the forces of light and darkness. The forces of darkness overcame the forces of light, and the sun would fall out of the sky, symbolizing its defeat. It would be raised from its death each morning, and man's salvation was reliant on this occurrence. The man knew that surely this was the work of the gods, since it occurred in heaven. Man, being ignorant and unenlightened, viewed all unexplainable forces in nature as gods, and this was the formulation of the first religion. As the seasons changed from summer to autumn and finally to winter, he was faced with yet an even more deadly obstacle than the night, the cold of winter. This time he was required to do something to ensure his survival that he had never had to do before. Think. If he could not think, he would sit subjected to the harshness of the elements, only to survive if he was fortunate. Many died, but some survived. Time went on, and those who did not adapt to their environment and learn the lessons needed to survive would fall victim to the laws of nature, elimination of the unfit. Natural selection was hard at work, and those who did not advance perished. The mind of those that survived advanced rapidly. Techniques for survival were handed down to their offspring, and those who could not hack it were eliminated. One night, while a man was sleeping in his cave, he was awakened to the sound of a loud crackling noise. He saw a glow a short distance away from the cave, and upon further inspection, he stumbled upon a tree set ablaze by a lightning bolt. Perhaps this was the first time he had seen fire. Perhaps it wasn't. If it was, we can imagine that he immediately noticed and enjoyed that the fire was warm. We imagine that he also noticed it was giving light to him so that he can see in the darkness. This reminded him of the sun, which also brought light and warmth. Surely this was a gift from the gods. Perhaps he reached out to grab the fire, and it burnt his hand the first couple of times. Soon, he realized how to tame it, and he broke a branch off a nearby tree, began poking it into the fire. This set the stick on fire, and to his amazement, he had, for the first time, a control of an element. It was at this moment that man was forever transformed. He realized that he could make use of this fire for the purpose he needed, and thus gave birth to intellect. With some experimentation, he learned how to keep the fire going. It kept him warm day and night. It kept him safe from the beasts who hunted him. If any beast came near, he would pick up the branch and attack the beast with the flames. The beast would run away in horror, and suddenly this man was superior to all living things, including other men. He had learned something that no one else knew, a mystery. He possessed a knowledge that was more valuable than all the other knowledge of the era. He was the first priest, the first scientist, and the first king. He was a new man. He had been enlightened. This man realized that the element of fire was not to be feared, but to be utilized. Man, with his newly birthed intellect, looked around with his eyes open for the first time to see his environment, and wondered in amazement what other elements could be utilized as the fire had been. With his newly gained knowledge and the ability to observe his role in a new way, he began to experiment. Through careful observation, he noticed that the world was ruled by regular occurring forces that worked in cycles and not the product of any higher being. These forces could be predicted and understood. He charted the location and path of the stars, moon, and sun. The rest of men, in fear and ignorance of the unknown, they looked to this illumined man for protection. Simple observational sciences eluded these men. They remained ignorant as beasts. It was at this time that this one man gave way to the emergence of a handful of illumined ones, having the knowledge of the first man, and contributed to the growth of humanity by kindly and freely giving their knowledge to the unenlightened man. The people, who were unenlightened, seeing that these men knew mysteries that only the gods could know, began to view these men as representatives of the gods and called them shamans or priests, and eventually even gods. The illumined man began to figure out how to use more sophisticated weapons. He learned to shape spears for protection and for hunting. He customized the bow and arrow. He learned how to use various materials to make baskets, how to preserve food, and how to build houses. The skills of the new man grew in efficiency and eventually banded together to form tribes. The first societies were born. They learned to hunt in groups and protect themselves from the cold winter by using the skin of the animals they hunted. The discovery of certain herbs as medicine and many other sciences were viewed by the ignorant as magic. As the newly enlightened man continued to teach the others tools that would ensure their survival, they would begin to become angry and would use these weapons violently on one another. During a time of low food supply, the unenlightened man's instincts to survive would overwhelm him and cause him to steal food and consume it rather than to save it. This put the rest of the village in danger. These types of irrational behaviors ran rampant in a superstitious society, and so the shaman realized that such things could not continue. He knew that these common people perceived all the forces that were in the natural world to be in motion by forces they interpreted as gods, and realizing himself that there were no such thing as God, and realizing the dangers of the irrational behavior of the superstitious man, he came to one final conclusion, that they needed to be brought under control. Since he realized that man had not the sense to preserve food in case of a drought, he caused the men to sacrifice items to the gods so that they would be content to cause the return of the rainy season. So he developed rituals to the gods to appease them. Coincidentally, he also realized that the sacrifice of such food would ensure that the men always had in their mind the threat of a possible drought. The illumined man played on the superstitions of the others, and it was because of this fact alone that he was able to cause them to behave more appropriately, to keep them from believing that he was, in fact, a member of the hierarchy with godlike powers. He would use various intoxicating concoctions to induce a spiritual encounter for the villagers during their ritual. He told stories to explain the various natural occurrences, and men were in fear of the gods and therefore in fear of the shaman. It was this fear that kept man within the guidelines necessary for a successful society. And it was this fear that kept the illumined man in a position of power. At first, he freely gave his knowledge to men, but he realized the importance of sustaining a position of authority over the ignorant for his and their own protection. The shaman needed to make sure his knowledge was handed down after he died to the responsible alone. So he formed a school, a mystery school. The object of this school was not merely to teach men about the hidden occult sciences or magic, but to see if they were ready and capable of accepting that there is no God and assume the responsibility as shepherd over the flock. He wanted to see if other potentials would realize as he did and take their place of authority over the elements, or if they would submit to them in fear and be a servant to those forces. This had to be done slowly, with levels of teaching and testing to ensure that the student was worthy of the position of shaman. At the top was the promise of a great secret, a secret that would give the student, initiate, power and make him ruler over all the other men as a god, and finally put to rest the greatest mystery of man's soul, how and why we are here. Okay, let me just make a few comments about all that I just read. Basically, like I said, this is my perspective from my studying, and this is what I perceived to be taught in the mystery schools. There are so many different varieties of this story, all the way from the men were gods to the men were not, like what I just read, and all the variations between. I mean, it could be any of these. People believe whatever they want, obviously, and like I said, this occult religion has no defining doctrine necessarily. But there is basically understood to be something at the highest levels of these organizations, an organized body who is handing down what they consider to be the secret teachings of the ages or the sacred knowledge. They've never revealed to anybody outside of this group what this alleged secret knowledge is. Some people believe they don't even have a secret knowledge. Who knows? I guess the people who do know, if they're really keeping it secret, they ain't going to tell you. So my position, and I'm openly admit to this, this is my belief based upon the information that I studied, and I could be wrong. And anybody else who tells you what they believed could be wrong as well. Anybody can be wrong because nobody knows what's right. Nobody knows if there's really even a group there. There's just alleged to be one. So, and I hope this isn't confusing if this is your first time hearing about this type of thing, but there's no way to know. History is already gone. We don't know what happened back then. We don't have a record. We have some information that we can study, the hieroglyphs and the religions and the legends. We do know that the mystery cults did exist in the ancient world, and I'm going to go through that in the future podcast and talk about where these alleged religions were supposed to have come from. We know that they exist today. We do know that they have upper levels today. Whether they have a superior upper level or that exists or not is unknown and unprovable. Well, I wouldn't say so unprovable. It's hard to prove. And you're still kind of, I mean, depending on how much information you need in order to be totally proven, there is always going to be that degree of, well, you could be wrong. So, you know, definite answers and definite perspectives don't exist when you're studying this topic, unfortunately. But I believe that I'm right, and I'm going to give you evidence and quotes and everything else. And I think as time goes on, you'll agree with me that this is really what they believe. So being that I said that that is the upper mysteries, then of course there was the lower mysteries. And the lower mysteries, I would like you to go, if you would take the time. I'm not going to read it just because reading for me is really hard. And I read that because I wrote it. But this person is online. You can read this book. It's available online at a website. So if you just want to hop over and check it out, that would save me a whole lot of trouble. But the website is www.theosociety.org. That's T-H-E-O Society, S-O-C-I-E-T-Y.org. And when you go to that website, let me give you directions on how to get through it. You will go to the Theosophical University Press on the left-hand side. Click that, and you will see, if you scan down, as you scan down, a list of books. The book that I want you to go for is Grace F. Notch. It's about, if you take your scroll bar on the left, right, and you scan halfway down, you'll see it. She has 3 books listed: The Mystery Schools, Theosophy in the Kabbalah, and To Light a Thousand Lamps. Okay? And it says right there, next to The Mystery Schools, full text online to the right. Click that. And you are in a book about the Mystery Schools, coming from the Theosophical Research Society, which was founded by Madame Blavatsky. Yeah, so this is coming from an authority on New Age, not on Freemasonry or occultism in general, just New Age. This is Theosophical University Press. And you'll see the contents listed there. And if you go all the way down to the bottom, on the left-hand corner, it says Part 1. Click there, and you're on Chapter 1, The Founding of the Brotherhood. So if you read through that, what you will get is the exoteric interpretation of the Mystery Schools and how they came into being, how they were founded. And you will see hints of basically everything that I said. But of course, their interpretation being that they are still caught up in the superstitious elements of believing in gods, you will get that interpretation. And, you know, you're welcome to believe whatever you want. I'm totally don't mind. I'm going to give, even if you don't believe me with that, that's fine, because I'm going to be getting into a lot of information that is irrefutable, and you will see that a lot of what I have to say is true, even if you disagree with me on this one particular thing. So, let's see, I'm at 23 minutes now. I'm going to go ahead and start to get into the beginnings of the Mystery Schools just by encapsulating. I encourage you to go ahead and research as I'm going through this on your own. Find out what other people believe about it. If you need any direction on where to go to get information, feel free to hit me up on the podcast or on the forum, and I'll be glad to direct you to some more information. Actually, what I decided to do is I'm going to play a clip, actually, from a thing I found on YouTube recently, which is this guy who opened up his own mystery school. Now, I mentioned before that the intent of the New World Order, or the New Age, is the restoration of the mystery schools to modern day. Okay, it's to bring them back and have that structure of government over the world governments, of the, you know, the priesthood over the world governments again. For the sake of mankind, to bring us back into an age of enlightenment, or back into, you know, order, so to speak, because we've been in an age of chaos where man was allowed to rule. And I think the prime example, or at least what is used as a prime example, is the United States, and how we were incapable of ruling our own government, and therefore needs to be controlled. Thus, you get the New World Order. But anyways, so this guy has his own mystery school. I thought it was really interesting. I'm going to go ahead and post the video on my website with this podcast so you can see it if you want to see the video. Otherwise, I'm just going to play the audio now.
Hi, I'm Raven Grimasi. I'm sitting here today in the sacred grove of Dhyana, here at the College of the Crossroads. I'd like to talk a little bit about our project. The College of the Crossroads was founded in July of 2003 by myself and author Stephanie Taylor. The project is designed to recreate a sacred grove to the old gods and goddesses of our ancestors. Here on the property, we are creating a mystery school created in the fashion of the old ones of the Aegean Mediterranean, the ancient Greek, Egyptian, and Roman style mystery schools. We have classes here on the property that include training for priests and priestesses, teachings on the old ways, magic, ritual, instruction, community. We also are developing a camping area here, where people can come and have retreats. Groups can come out, spend the night, do rituals beneath a moonlit sky and starry sky. The property is very conducive to just spending a day or two by yourself amidst the oak and boulders of the property, the green grasses and valleys, hillsides, so that you can get back in touch with nature, get back in touch with the ways of our ancestors. And we're proud to be able to present quality teachers and instructors here, priestesses and priests, for community, for teaching, to have available. We're particularly honored that this is the chosen home for lectures and workshops in Southern California by renowned author R.J. Stewart. Those of you who are familiar with R.J. will know that of his fairy workshops and fairy magic and a variety of books that he writes on the old ways of his ancestors of Scotland. As we continue to grow and develop the College of the Crossroads here, we do ask for help in many ways from the community because this is ultimately a community resource. We need assistance in everything from mundane caretaking of the land to help with building, with clearing, donations of both time, money, and labor. Anything that you can do to help build your own community here at the College of the Crossroads. For further information and ways that you can get involved in this vital project, please check out our website at collegeofthecrossroads.org, and thank you for your support.
Okay, now I'm just going to read some stuff from a book by Menly P. Hall. He was Freemasonry's greatest philosopher. He wrote this book called The Secret Teachings of All the Ages, Masonic, Hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Rosicrucian Symbolical Philosophy. Say that three times fast. The first thing I want to mention about this book is that at the very front, when you open up a few pages in, it says, "This book is dedicated to the rational soul of the world." The rational soul. And you'll hear this word rationed a lot. because you're dealing with rational, involving supernatural things isn't very rational, is it? At least, I guess it depends on how you look at things, but they definitely are coming from a perspective where there is no God. Now, I'm going to read a foreword that comes from Henry L. Drake. He's vice president of the Philosophical Research Society. And it says some very interesting things. It says, "It is an honor to have been invited to write this foreword. My aim shall be set forth briefly what a careful study of this important volume over a period of years has meant to me. Associations of men and women bound together by oaths and obligations into esoteric fraternities have descended from the earliest times and bear witness to a natural inclination to perpetuate doctrines which lead to the good of mankind.
With the growth of social consciousness, these secret societies became the custodians of the highest cultural concepts. Their initiation rites were the symbolic pageantries suitable to inspire veneration for the divine mysteries and admiration for the powers of the nature and of God. Most of the mythologies of classical nations were originally rituals of secret societies. And it is a mistake to assume that earlier cultures accepted as literal the elaborate theology and legendary found in their traditions. So there he is. He's saying it's not literal. Historically, the secret societies were closely identified with state religions. Basically, basic knowledge was believed to have been bestowed by the gods in a remote age. The esoteric philosophies have always been taught by means of secret organizations, to which candidates were admitted only after appropriate preparation and initiatory rites. These spiritual brotherhoods of scholars, sages, and mystics have flourished among all peoples, ancient and modern, and in all parts of the world. In the program of the mysteries, each individual must grow into the comprehension of truth. Before he could be entrusted with the divine powers of mind and will, he must accept knowledge as a responsibility to his creator and his world, rather than as an opportunity for the advancement of personal ambitions. The masters of the mysteries taught secret practices and disciplines by which the properly qualified disciples could develop the potent abilities latent within the soul, and so come into conscious communication with spiritual realities. Initiates of the philosophical societies came to be regarded as possessing extraordinary faculties and powers. They enjoyed the special favor of the divinities, performed miracles, and were worthy of the title twice born, for they had come to a second birth from the womb of the mysteries. These adept philosophers were the truly evolved human beings. Most of the arts and sciences which enriched the modern world were discovered, developed, and in many instances perfected by the initiate philosophers and priests. Scholarship was recognized as the pursuit most suitable to the abilities of man. Scholarship was recognized as the pursuit most suitable to the abilities of man. So it's suitable to your abilities. Are you able of understanding? Are you not? But scholarship was always the means, never the end. The end of the sacred sciences was the abstraction of the human soul from bondage to the senses, and its preparation to receive within itself the light of vast truths. Some men are naturally suited to higher learning, for they possess integrity of motive, the patience of effort, the vision of ends. These labored toward the soul's improvement and championed enlightened progress above other considerations. Those of different opinion opposed to the mystery schools. Opposed the mystery schools. It was inevitable that the initiates of the mysteries would unite themselves against the forces seeking their extinction. Thus, while the secret doctrine with this body of disciples functioned more or less openly in ancient society, it later passed almost completely from public view. The circumstance should not be interpreted as a decline of plan or purpose. The esoteric schools remained as a powerful force for the regeneration of human institutions. Those who do not understand the spiritual sciences question their use of unusual symbols, myths, and figures employed to conceal the essential teachings. Let it be remembered that these quote-unquote clouds were no part of the original doctrine, but were made necessary by intolerance and bigotry. The use of indirect communication was based entirely upon practical considerations. To remain unknown was the best way to prevent a repetition of the disaster which occurred to the Knights Templar. The veils, which concealed the arcana of the mysteries, were not employed to cover ignorance, but to protect wisdom, and in Europe it was protected for 1,000 years. The secrets of the mysteries are obviously metaphysical, philosophical, and esoteric, and relate to processing taking place within the fields of the human psyche during the practice of the spiritual disciplines. Discipleship ends in the attainment of the inner capacity suitable for the realization of the esoteric tradition. The disciples, by expanding consciousness, give the initiate practical mastery over that which is learned in constant awareness as to the proper use of higher learning. If the sacred academies imparted only scientific, intellectual, ethical, or cultural doctrines somewhat in advance of their time, they could produce only scholars. The initiates of the esoteric tradition were never regarded merely as brilliant intellectuals. From white-walled Memphis to rock-hewn Ellora, they were honored as practicing a higher dimension of essential knowledge. History preserves the records of numerous persons living in different times and in various places who have exhibited a knowledge and skill which cannot be explained according to the present standards of erudition. We cannot ignore the testimonies of such learned men as Pythagoras, Buddha, and Plotinus. Many of the noblest members of our race have expressed their profound admiration for the esoteric institutions flourishing in their own times. Not to recognize the esoteric sciences is to regard most that has contributed to the advancement and improvement of the human state during the last 5,000 years. There being the divine order of learned superior to mundane knowledge, and its being available, the time is most appropriate for the further restoration of the sacred tradition. Adeptship is the state of complete spiritual maturity so far as this is possible to a member of the human family. Deficient in nothing necessary to a life of wisdom, the adept is sufficient to his own needs and capable of determining that course of personal action most likely to contribute to enlightenment. The adepts foreshadow the state of mankind when it will have attained the full release of its faculties and its powers. The adept is, therefore, the truly evolved of our species. Accordingly, the adepts, considered together as the citizens of an invisible empire of philosophical elect, constitute the heroic elder brothers, the custodians and protectors of humanity. As the interpreters of the mysteries, they are the true educators and illuminators. As the redeemed, the servants of divine purpose, they comprise a powerful, creative, and directive force in the world. The science of life is, therefore, the supreme science, and the art of living the finest of the arts. There have always been true seekers willing to acknowledge the sovereignty of the eternal over the temporal. These have dedicated themselves to the mastery of life and have perpetuated that from generation to generation the knowledge and skill they accumulated. This body of essential knowledge is the esoteric tradition. The institutions which perpetuate this tradition are the mystery schools, and the graduates of these schools are the adepts. This volume reveals that the lore and legendary of the world, the scriptures and the sacred books, and the great philosophical systems all tell the same story. Human ambition may produce the tyrant. Direct aspiration will produce the adept. This, then, seems to me to be the significant message of Manly P. Hall's Encyclopedic Tome. So my sincere wish is that this contribution by our friend may mean as much in your life as it has in mine. So there's a lot that can be understood in there that I've been saying. And just reading through this book, I mean, there's a lot in here. And I'm not going to read it all to you. I'm going to read bits and pieces as time goes on, because we're basically going to do a history lesson. And I'm going to, as we're going through this history lesson, I'm going to look for quotes from all these different people to validate what I'm saying so you can see that that's what they believed. And I'm just kind of drawing it together into a linear history for you, so it's easier to understand. But with that, I think I'm going to go ahead and call it quits for this podcast. I'm getting a little tired, and I'm going to continue on the next podcast, of course. And actually, I might throw another podcast up in the next week or so, because I'm a little irritated about the fact that we have the vote going on tomorrow, and this new documentary just came out called, was it Hacking Democracy? If you haven't seen it, I have it posted on the website. Just go, I've posted other things since then, so just click on the vote category, and it should be right there on the top, or near the top, and you can watch it. It's about an hour and a half. It's a great documentary. Basically, they show that the voting machines can be hacked. The proper authorities have been contacted about this, telling them to fix it, and they said they would, and they said they did, and they didn't. So that's kind of scary to me. I mean, it's not that I didn't already imagine it, but to see it laid out like that on a film on HBO and feel like nothing's really ever going to be done about it is kind of got me fired up. So I might talk about that on a future podcast here. But anyways, if you're enjoying this, please stop by the forum or the Frapper map. Throw yourself up on there. Say hi. Let me know you're out there. If you want to get in touch with me, ask me any questions or make a comment, you can email me at let's do admin, that's admin at truthleftfreedom.org. I check my emails daily. I am on my forum probably daily as well. So if you want to stop by, just please do. I encourage you to. And please let everybody else that you know about this podcast if you think they would be interested. Until then, I sign off. Peace, love. Till next time.